Welcome to the Calder Farmstead, your place for news, analysis, and shenanigans from the American Hockey League.
Hello, hello, hello. Once again from the TSN Trade Center set.
And still Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome to the Calder Farmstead Podcast, episode number 131 for Saturday, March 11th, 2023. If you were hoping for a podcast featuring negotiating tips on agriculture, import, export, trade deals, we are not going to be much help. This is an American Hockey League podcast. My name is Sean O'Brien from StatsTrack and the AHL's only league-wide analytics guy.
And I'm Sarah Avampato from Full Press Hockey and SB Nation's Canes Country.
As always, we thank you for tuning in with us. And if you're new to hearing Sarah and I talk about hockey, we're going to talk about all of the trades that have affected the AHL in the last week or so since our last episode. The trade deadline for the AHL has officially passed, so we are no longer going to get scooped. This isn't our normal format, but a lot has happened, so we have to kind of wrap up the end of the trades that and moves that got made. We both watch a lot of AHL games, and we're going to talk about what we see when we watch the film, as well as use some advanced stats to help us break it down. If that's new to you, you may want to head over to our podcast feed or YouTube channel, wherever you're checking us out from, and check out episode zero. It's a short primer on some of the stats we're going to be talking about, as well as how we view what's important on the ice. So if you're new to some of the more advanced hockey stats terms like PDO or the point shares model, or newer hockey terms like controlled zone entries or Royal Road, go check that out so you better be able to pick up what we're putting down. I promise it's not that nerdy or technical. It's only 20 minutes, and let's be honest, you wasted 20 minutes applying to be the next GM of the Philadelphia Flyers. It was always going to be Danny Briere. Always. You're never going to get that time back. So next time, why not spend a little more time with us talking hockey? Now, normally we do deep dives in teams here. We take about eight a week and then talk about some news in the beginning. But we have trades from 17 different AHL teams to discuss here. So, this is going to be a lot of shallow dives, kind of rapid fire here than you would normally get on our show, which is more based on stupid jokes and deep dive analysis. Because, well, we can't be here all night. So let's get on with it. Sarah, are you ready?
I am ready. And we're going to start with Hartford, who has been kind of loading up for a playoff run, question mark. Hartford in their latest trades get Wyatt Kalinuk and Anton Bleed. So what's the deal with them?
So for Kalinuk, he's known for his offensive game. Solid skater, likes to jump into the rush or lead the rush. He's somebody who's going to activate frequently off the blue line in the offensive zone. Transition, he's capable of fielding pucks off the back wall, beating that first forechecker with his feet. His puck skills and playmaking vision are good, but they're not great. He isn't that creative a playmaker, but he finds open teammates and, makes the plays that are there for the most part. On the defensive side of the puck, well, it's not great. Kalmyk's offensive instincts usually don't leave him in good places for effective defensive zone play, which is unfortunate. But at the AHL level, he's able to be a net positive with what he brings on offense. But his defense also needs, some work. He's someone who I would definitely want to carefully place with a more defensive-minded partner so at least someone is back there doing defensive things because, as we said, he likes to jump up into the offense, which is good, but also leaves him vulnerable a little bit. Antoine Bleed, they send Gustav right out to Colorado, and they get basically the same player back. Antoine Bleed's kind of a bottom six power forward grinder type, kind of just goes to the nets, bangs home rebounds kind of guy. little bit of skating burst to him, but really lacks the raw tools like puck skills or shooting talent to make more of an offensive impact than like a 20-25 point pace per 72 games. So if he has line mates that are a little more skilled and help, you know, carry him to more production, that's possible. But it seems like a lot of what he does is, if you squint at Gustav Rydell's game, you're getting mostly the same thing, which kind of makes that part of the trade confusing. It seems like, if I had to guess, there was probably someone who asked out and they were like, well, we like you and we want to keep you, so we're going to trade you for basically as close to you as we can get. And that seems to be the base of this trade. But both good players. I like Kalnuk more. I think he's more of an impact player than Pleat at this point. But still, Hartford clearly loading up first to make the playoffs and then to see if they can get through to future rounds. All right. Like I said, this is going to be rapid fire. We have a lot of teams and a lot of players to talk about. Let's go to the business the Marlies did. They got to Radim Zahorna. Sarah, tell me about Mr. Zahorna.
So first off, he should be getting some frequent flyer miles because he has been basically everywhere this season. He started in Pittsburgh's system as a free agent last season, was claimed off waivers by Calgary during training camp. Pittsburgh, for some reason, didn't claim him back. And then he was traded to Toronto. He is a big guy with, surprisingly puck skills for someone of his size, especially when he's in tight with it. He's a good but not great shooter. He doesn't have that typical power forward big man game that you might expect from someone of his size. He's not overly physical. He doesn't go to the top of the crease and just sit there and use his size to that advantage. So doesn't entirely do what maybe what you think he'd be doing. And really his skating ultimately is holding him back from making a bigger impact than he does right now. He has been a solid AHLer, especially as a middle six forward, though. And Toronto, I feel like, is always looking to stack their team with as much depth as possible. So he will be, he'll fill in sort of in that middle blob in Toronto. We're going to head to Utica next, where they made a couple of moves. Utica got Jace Haraluk and Zach Hayes. So Sean, take it away.
Yeah, Utica actually is going to get, you know, actual real players on their team for this set of trades, the ones we made talked about last episode. Very unlikely to actually give them a physical body in Utica this season. But Jace Haraluk's been a productive playmaker in the past. He's been hurt most of this year. I believe I saw that he was on the injury report as recently as this week, although he has played at least recently. So I'm assuming it's kind of a more nagging injury than something that's going to actually keep him sidelined for longer. But in the games that I've seen from him, though, you see those flashes of high-end playmaking vision. He has good puck skills. He's a decent skater. Good, but not great hockey IQ. If he can find some health, I think he can be a solid contributor for the Comets down the stretch as a middle six playmaker. Not a battler, not a physical guy, not a very large guy. Not going to be, you know, out there winning board battles and or killing penalties, but he's someone who can give their power play a boost, help find guys like Alex Holtz maybe to help Holtz unleash that wicked shot of his. Zach Hayes, this is the second time he's been traded this season, and the report on him pretty much remains the same from when he got sent to Chicago. He's a big, slow defenseman that's a masher at the net front and along the boards, but he's not going to do a whole lot else. He wasn't very good in Henderson, wasn't very good in Chicago. I don't think he's going to be very good at Utica, but he is a bottom pair AHL defenseman, which is something, in terms of filling out the back end of your defensive depth. He is definitely a guy. He belongs firmly in the AHL, but that's about it. He's just big physical masher, not going to give you a whole lot of offense on purpose. So at least Utica is getting what should be two real players in this series of trades, whereas the last series, not much to show for it. Let us stick to the North Division and talk about what Rochester did, getting Austin Strand and Carson Giesewitz. Sarah, tell me about Strand and Giesewitz.
All right, so Austin Strand is a big physical defenseman. He's not going to provide a whole bunch in terms of offense. Strand, I'm familiar with him from his time in Ontario's system, the Kings system, and it feels like this past season he's just kind of taken a big nosedive. I feel like watching Austin Strand this year is not the same guy that I spent a couple years watching with the rain. So don't entirely know what's going on there. But for Rochester right now, he's not going to be much more than a physical grinder in his own zone. He's not a great skater and struggles to defend against the rush because of it. You know, below average in playmaking vision, puck skills, like not particularly good in transition. So just really struggled this season, particularly on the goals. So, you know, that, you know, but not a great year for him. Not a whole lot of excitement in his play this year. He's just a net front board battle guy. He's going to take some penalties he probably shouldn't. For a Rochester team that already has plenty of guys like this, plenty of size, toughness, don't really know why they looked to get him, but sure, fine. For Carson Giesewitz, he also is basically just run-of-the-mill fourth liner, could easily be in the ECHL instead. So this is another move that doesn't really move the needle a whole lot.
Yeah, yeah. Rochester did things, and that's about it. Let's move on here, shall we?
Yeah. We're going to head up to Laval next, where we're going to hear about Frederick Allard. So what's he bring to the Rocket?
So Allard has had kind of an up and down, I would say, career over the last couple of years. He's still relatively young, too, even though it feels like he's been in the league a lot longer. But he has good hockey IQ. He's okay defensively, but the offensive toolkit isn't very sexy, let's say. And you'll notice that, you know, his kind of up and down box score stats, whereas on good teams, he can contribute some offense, but on middling to bad teams, he can't. And that kind of says to me that he's not someone who drives play in the offensive zone. And watching his tape, that's what I see too. Like, he can make obvious plays on offense, but, you know, he needs talent around him for those plays to turn into points, because he's not really the one driving the play. Defensively, he's fine. I think he's not been as great this year, as I'm sure Sarah has noted. I feel like when he was in Milwaukee, he was much better, but yeah. I think coming home to Laval for him should be hopefully a little bit of a refresher. It's always surprising every once in a while you see guys who look like they're just stuck in a rut. And they, you know, go to just a different place, and suddenly it's like we're seeing, you know, this giant weight lift off them, and they look back to what we normally are used to seeing. Hopefully that could be Freddie Allard going to Laval. I'm not holding my breath for that one, but it wouldn't be out of the range of possibilities to see him kind of spruce back up again. But I think he's a fine, like, bottom four guy for Laval, but they need defense, and he's a defenseman.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. As we said, rapid fire, so let's keep moving here. Belleville makes a lot of moves, many future considerations moves, but they also net Graham McPhee and Dylan Blugis. Sarah, any thoughts on either of them?
Just here for the vibes on this one. There's not much to see with this move. They add some guys who can fill out the bottom of the roster. Both of these guys could easily be ECHL players, though. Blugis has basically bounced back and forth between the ECHL and the A this season. McPhee is basically the same. So Belleville adds bodies, but not helpful bodies.
Yeah, two physical guys here. I don't really understand these moves for Belleville, who has, like, finally seen that coaching change bump get them places. They're, I think, 7-3 in their last 10 games and are actually, like, making a push to the playoffs. And then at the trade deadline, we're just like, but what if we decided we didn't want to make the playoffs? Like, they sent off Jace Howlick, who, you know, while injured, was still a useful contributor on as a forward, whereas Graham McPhee, like you said, really isn't. I don't think Christian Rubens is anything special, and we'll get to him later, but I think he's a better defenseman than Dylan Blugis. It's just kind of weird to see the BSens, like, have success on the ice for an extended stretch, which is the first time in this calendar year that that's really true. And then they make trades that are kind of head scratching, like, that are clearly not helping move their roster forward to win hockey games. Any thoughts on that, Sarah? Just
I mean, it's so weird because, yeah, like we said, like Belleville is kind of in a place where they could do something after all year of everyone being injured or just not good. And then they make two trades that just, yeah, neither of these move the needle. Like they don't, I don't know what they did. Belleville, why?
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't get it either. Is this, oh my God. Is this Troy? So let's see. It's which man is the assistant GM in Belleville? Oh. Troy was the coach. This is Trent yeah. Man. So that maybe guy. This is Trent Man being like, well, my brother's not going to coach this team. Then. That is wild speculation.
I like that conspiracy theory.
I mean, if that's true, I respect the pettiness. I really do.
Right.
Somebody, yes. Like, if somebody fired my brother, yeah, yeah. I'd be very taking petty. Some names down on my way out.
Yeah, yeah.
So while we have plenty of other trades to talk about, all of them are Western Conference ones. The East was the least active of the two conferences. So this is usually where we're going to take our break. It is no way the halfway point of this episode, but it usually divides the East and the West. So we're just going to go with that. So after the break, we're going to get to the Western Conference trade acquisitions. If you're just here for the Eastern side of things, cool. Thanks. Thank you for stopping by. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you're listening to us from so you get episodes in a timely fashion. Also, check us out on social media. We have a good time there. Links to our social media, our merch store, all of that kind of good stuff can be found on our Linktree page at linktr.ee/TheCalderFarmstead. We're going to pay some bills, run some ads. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. And we are back. If you are in the podcast version, I hope you enjoyed some lovely ads. Maybe about sports betting or insurance. I have no idea. On video, it's been like 10 seconds. Let's get to the Western Conference where most of the action was. We are going to start in the Central Division with your defending Calder Cup champion, Chicago Wolves. They got Jack Dugan, Sarah. Tell me about Jack Dugan.
So he's a player who finally kind of started to find his groove lately in Utica. He had 10 points in his last 12 games with the Comets, and then they trade him. To a team that is out of a playoff spot. Jack Dugan is a playmaker primarily. He has good but not great vision at that. His puck skills are just okay. About league average as a shooter, but can still generate some offense primarily off the rush. His skating isn't great, especially as he's coming off of an injury. And so that, you know, that could be a concern for them. But if he can find chemistry in Chicago, he can be a useful middle six player for them, perhaps even better. And you know, their lineup's been getting healthier. I think Ryan Dzingel's coming back this weekend. And so he can fit in and help provide some of that depth that they have really lacked this year.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say Chicago, if they can get Kochekov back as quickly as possible. He's on like emergency call up for Carolina right now. And I mean, I don't think anyone trusts Zach Sochenko to get the job done, but hopefully they can basically outscore their problems with some of the depth that they're getting at this point. Yeah. Let's move on. Like I said, rapid fire here.
Heading north to Milwaukee, who gets Anthony Angelo. What's he bringing to the Admirals?
Not as much as he used to be honest with you. Like I've not paid that much attention to Anthony Angelo before this deadline because I haven't got to see too much of Springfield. And it seems like the games that I've caught of them, he either just hasn't been noticeable or wasn't a part of, but I remember him and Wilkes-Barre Scranton as being like good, like someone who was getting call-ups to the NHL for merit. And he's definitely fallen off the last couple years. Decent skater for his size, still has some burst. Okay hockey IQ, okay puck skills, still takes way too many penalties for my liking. Like a lot of his PIMs are not fights or misconducts. They're like genuine 2-minute minors that put his team on a penalty kill. Defensively, he's involved, but he does tend to chase pucks and chase hits from time to time. He also will look to cheat out of the zone a little too often for my liking. Again, he's declined recently though, and used to be going from like a solid top six option at the AHL level to more of a pretty clear third liner. But perhaps, as we said, like changes of scenery can do a lot of weird things to guys where, you know, suddenly they find the fountain of youth, or like they decide that this is the team that they're going to start caring about. And hopefully that's Anthony Angelo in Milwaukee, because a change of scenery is refreshing him would be something that he needs. But he's more depth player than primary scorer these days, but there's still some value there for Milwaukee. But he definitely seems like he's taking that team back into more of the rough and tumble Milwaukee Admirals that we're used to seeing in years past than this one that's been a little more high flying and fun, dare I say. But yeah, interesting piece for Milwaukee, but let's keep it moving here. Rockford gets Anton Khudobin and gives Sarah the chance at a bingo square. Sarah, tell us about Dobby.
Yeah, my dream of crossing off the Anton Khudobin returns to the NHL square like has just gotten one step closer to reality. He's been assigned to Rockford, obviously, as they continue loading that team up for a playoff run. But like Alex Stalock has been, I mean, the Blackhawks are running with Alex Stalock and Peter Mrazek as their goaltenders, who, if you look at either of them the wrong way, get hurt. And so at some point between now and the end of the season, they're going to need a goaltender. Like just today, he ended up being able to back up. But today, Friday, Stalock was uncertain because he had a stomach issue, and they weren't even sure he was going to be able to back them up. So there's going to be a need for a goaltender in Chicago. And I can only hope they hear my plea to get that bingo square and call him up. He's been fine for Texas, 13-4-4. 2.89 goals against average, 8.99 save percentage, which is better than Arvid Soderblom, who has struggled this season. It's slightly better in terms of goals against average than Dylan Wells, who he was traded for. He's yet to play for Rockford, so not entirely sure what the plan is for him. It's clear his best days are behind him, but for a Rockford team that is hoping to make a deep run in the playoffs, you can do a lot worse than having a veteran goaltender like this around. He's a guy who's generally well-liked, and I know that Texas wanted to try to find somewhere for him to play, get him another NHL opportunity. That's at least gotten easier with Chicago, who could, you know, easily give him a game or two at the end of the season. You know, it doesn't matter how the game goes, call him up, whatever, instead of Dallas, where he'd be a last resort, because obviously they have a playoff push. So nothing happening yet with him, but I'm really, really rooting for that bingo square.
Fun fact, Anton Khudobin made his professional debut and Arvid Soderblom was 8 years old.
I need to leave. That's... I gotta go. I think he has to go. I don't think he wants to know that stat either. Wow. Amazing.
Yep. Just throwing it out there. Yep. Casually, all of us are old.
Yes. Horrible passage of time. We're going to head to the West Coast, the best coast. Bakersfield is up next. They got Xavier Bernard. What or who is a Xavier Bernard?
Not a whole lot here. Physical defensive defenseman. Probably should be in the ECHL, was in the ECHL, I think a fair portion of this year and past years. He's a guy. He is, in fact, a guy. There's nothing to see here, really. This is, and at the absolute worst, a bottom pair defenseman for Bakersfield. At best, he's like their number eight and maybe their second call up from the coast, or just a guy that kind of hangs out in the press box. Nothing to see here. So yeah, next move, please.
Colorado, they made slightly more impactful moves. They received Gustav Rydell and Cale Kessy.
So Rydell got some power play time with the Eagles, had good chemistry with countryman Oscar Olofsson, the best prospect in the Colorado pipeline right now. Played third line minutes this past Saturday against Calgary. Apparently he got into Colorado at 1:30 in the morning. Head coach Greg Cronin said post game, you know, that Rydell played with a good pace, going to continue to get better. Thank you, CC, for our notes from the Eagles on that. But Rydell's very much as we talked about in the Hartford segment, it seems like him and Antoine Bleed were just swapping, you know, for the closest player to the guy they sent away. Like, power forward, nose for the net, scores the majority of his goals from about 5 feet away from the top of the crease or less. Can play garbage man on the power play as your net front guy. Decent puck skills, not a bad skater for his size. He does have some burst. But overall, he's kind of a middle six at best, kind of more third line player. Can maybe do some power play two unit kind of stuff as the net front guy, but that's about it. And that's more or less what they had in Anton Bleed. So this is, you know, a kind of an interesting trade where it's like, we want to, this guy is getting traded, but we want basically the same guy in return. So that's Gustav Radel. Cale Kessy is second tour of duty in Colorado. He's been Hershey's primary goon since 2019. He also hasn't played since New Year's Eve this year. He's been hurt, or at least those are the rumblings, because we never get actual injury reports in this dumb league. But in terms of hockey skill, Cale Kessy's best hockey skill is punching dudes in the face. That's it. That's end of list for hockey skills for Cale Kessy. He just kind of goes out and tries to hit people and then fight people when necessary or when unnecessary, either and or both. Really shouldn't be the lineup unless you're expecting this game to get out of hand very quickly, in which case then yeah, punching people is his only hockey skill, really. We were talking off camera. It was like, I wonder if Cale Kessy watches like film, like does film sessions with the team. Cause it doesn't, I don't think he does. I think he just kind of is like shows up to the rink on game day, puts his gear on. It's like, all right, I go and try and hit the dude with the puck. And if he passes it, then I go and try and hit that guy. And then I go to the bench or the penalty box either. So, yeah, Rydell, much more impactful player than Cale Kessy. Kessy should probably be in the ECHL, but everyone seems to like the guy. And that is a, you know, career move for him, is being a guy that everyone likes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moving on. Abbotsford gets Zach Guattari, who is not the spokesperson for your local guitar center, but a defenseman. Sarah, tell me about him.
I mean, if he needs a second gig, guitar center, get at him. The model has him in the 62nd percentile as a third pairing guy. I think there's a little more maybe than what we've seen him from him already on offense, but you know, not quite yet. He has some puck skills, some playmaking vision. No, he's not ever going to put up 30 assists in a season in this league, but there's probably more offense in that skill set than we have seen so far on the score sheet. Defensively, he's good, but not great. Not overly thrilled with his defense on rush chances, but he does battle well at the net front. And for the most part, he's fine. I think he's probably going to play mostly third pair minutes, but it would be interesting to see what he can do with some second pair looks. We are going to stick in Canada with Calgary, as they get Dryden Hunt and Christian Rubens. What is the deal with both of them?
So Dryden Hunt is someone who, when he touches the puck, you can see a dude that's played 200 NHL games. He has that polish that you expect from a guy who's played at the highest level for that long. Decent skater, but lacks kind of a top gear to really put defenders on their heels. But he's someone who goes out there and works hard. Like, he's not, you don't see him doing the Ovechkin unplugged controller move very often. Not a terribly creative playmaker. He makes the plays that are there, but isn't someone who's really looking to attack the defense or, you know, sauce passes over two guys stick to for a one timer across Royal Road. He's more of a, that guy's open, he's the one I make the pass to. Mm-hmm. Definitely knows how to time his entries into the slot, though. He does a very good job of kind of getting lost, finding soft ice in the slot area. He'll often reload, he'll skate up around the circle and then come crashing back in. And he loses a lot of defenders that way who don't want to be chasing him that high in the zone. So he does that very well. I think he's an underrated shooter, but he's someone who has a nose for the net and does a very good job of just kind of getting lost behind defenses away from the puck. You'll see a lot of his goals, even the one he scored for Calgary already, just, oh, where did, like, he's wide open in the front of the net on an island by himself. Like, how did someone let Dryden Hunt just stand, you know, on that island in the slot? He does that a lot. He finds those little windows in which there's no one defending the back door, and that's where he is. All in all, solid addition to an already loaded Wranglers offense. They basically swapped him for Radim Zahorna. They don't play a very similar game. And it's kind of hard to say who I would prefer at this point. I think it's probably Dryden Hunt, but it's close. Both are talented, kind of middle of the lineup guys that can give you a very good depth scoring. But let's talk about Christian Rubens here, Christian's Rubens, more than one Christian. Big physical masher kind of guy, not going to contribute much on the score sheet. Not a great skater, not much on the offensive skill set. He's basically just a net front physical battler, board battler. And that's pretty much it. It wouldn't shock me to see him be kind of a rotational defenseman for the Wranglers, bottom pair, maybe a penalty kill, second unit kind of guy. But it would be like, if he's in the lineup every night, that would be at least mildly surprising to me, like a 4 out of 10 on the surprise scale. He seems like someone who's going to, you know, when there's injuries, is a good depth seventh defenseman, but I wouldn't put too much more on him than that for Calgary. Not getting a lot of offense, more just physical and mean. All right, let's talk about what Texas did. These are our order is way off here. I thought we finished the Central Division, but I lied. It happens. Texas gets Scott Reedy and Dylan Wells from two separate trades there, one with Chicago, the other with San Jose. Scott Reedy, we talked about him a little bit in the past, although it's been a while. Scott Reedy is a garbage man. He's a shooter with a nose for the net. He excels at finding that soft ice, has a smooth catch and release shot, a knack for finding rebounds, and just great at standing at the top of the crease, getting tips, getting rebounds, getting deflections, and finding ways to put the puck in the net that way. His puck skills and playmaking vision are probably around AHL average, though. His skating does not buy him any favors, though. He is not beating anyone in foot races, especially at the AHL level. However, we've said before, you know, if you can shoot the puck, that is the rarest and most valuable thing in hockey. And as long as you can put the puck in the net, you will always find work. And Scott Reedy has shooting talent and continues to find work. So for Texas, I would say he should be net front power play guy and be paired with, you know, guys who can move their feet a little bit better, carry the mail through the neutral zone, and then find him on the doorstep. Dylan Wells, at the absolute best, I would say he's an average AHL goaltender, and I think that's being rather generous. Not someone you want to be riding down the stretch. So if he's starting playoff games for Texas, problem. That is a problem. But for someone who, you know, is doing like a spot start in the regular season or maybe coming in to play the third period or something like that, fine. He's fine. But like, he's not someone I would want to be relying on in big moments. But he is a semi-capable goaltender at this level, we'll say. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Tucson. They got Stephen Kampfer from Grand Rapids. Sarah, tell me about Stephen Kampfer.
So at the apparently ancient age of 34 in hockey, Kampfer plays more of a smart game than anything else. He's solid in his own zone. He doesn't really get lost in the shuffle. In terms of skating, he has good edge work still, but lacks that straight line speed that's going to help him get through the ice. He defends the rush reasonably well, but never really has that, or no longer has that tight gap as his skating has deteriorated as he's gotten older. Offensively, not the most active, but he does use that, you know, better hockey IQ to find good plays and contribute. Not quite as useful in transition, resorts to plays like glass and out under light pressure just way too often, especially for someone of his experience. Even with those limitations, though, he is probably still one of the better defensemen on Tucson, so will be an asset for the Roadrunners there.
Let's keep it moving here. Go to the San Jose Barracuda, who picked up a nice piece from Texas in exchange for Scott Reedy. They got Jacob Peterson. Tell me about Jacob Peterson, Sarah.
So the model has him in the 61st percentile, which is about right based on who he is as a player. He's above average, but not by a ton. He's a decent two-way forward. He's got a nose for the net. Not a great skater. No skills that really stand out. He's just a well-rounded guy, jack of all trades, sort of, who can play up and down the lineup and contribute as a secondary scorer. So they're getting someone who feels like you can just sort of plug him in wherever you need him to in the lineup and go with it.
Yeah, he very much feels like a similar to like Chris Cuolo, who they got earlier in the year. A little bit better than like Jasper Weatherby was, more offensive, mm-hmm. a little bit more spry. But yeah, they seem to be collecting a lot of guys that are kind of in that, you know, solid two-way forward who can chip in a bunch of who can chip in points at secondary scoring. Like, I know they have Andrew Agazino already, who kind of also fits that mold, although a little more higher end on the offensive side. But yeah, that's I think a good description here. Let's keep it moving though. We are actually nearing the end of all of these moves.
So many. We're staying in the state of California to round things out. We're going to San Diego, where the Gulls have made a few moves. They get Chase Prisky and veteran player Andre Schuster. What are they both going to be bringing to the Gulls?
For Prisky, great playmaking vision, solid power play quarterback, a decent shooter, but his shot selection is not something I'm a huge fan of, because he will occasionally throw away low percentage shots on net from distance. And I'd like to see him make more plays instead of just, there's a little bit of pressure on me. Puck on the net. That will never get me benched. He's decent in transition, despite the fact that he's not a very good skater. That's maybe a little too harsh. He's about an average skater, but he doesn't have the foot speed to be, you know, racing past forechecking pressure. Defensively, he's not great and probably should be paired with a more defensive-minded partner, which doesn't bode well because, well, San Diego needs guys who can also play defense, but then they also need puck movers. It's very complicated in the things that San Diego needs. Andre Schuster is kind of a tough one. I thought about not even bringing him onto the outline for this episode just because it seems like he's kind of destined for Anaheim once he gets healthy. But, you know, there's the off chance that he might stay in San Diego because Schuster's kind of a quad A player, that he's typically in that like bottom pair seventh defender in the NHL, but ends up kind of playing a little bit in the AHL here and there as well. And he kind of seems to be heading that way for the Ducks when he gets healthy. Should he suit up for the goals? Physical defender, has some good offensive upside. He's not the most mobile, but he'll jump down into the play off the blue line. Doesn't have the most polished puck skills and has definitely looked awkward at times handling the puck, but he's good playmaking vision, good hockey IQ. And that kind of makes up for the fact that he's not the smoothest stick handler or passer. But that helps him produce offensively. He should be a useful defenseman for San Diego if he spends any serious time in Ron Burgundy's hometown. And useful defensemen in San Diego are not exactly growing on trees down there. I like both these moves for the Gulls, but they are also ones where it's like, I mean, at this point in the season, sure, I guess, but like this feels like that these would have been better moves had they made them in, say, November or December, when like there was still time left to maybe turn the season around. Whereas this feels kind of mean to Chase Prisky, at least. whereas like Schuster, I imagine, goes to Anaheim and, you know, at least gets to cash NHL paychecks. But yeah, I like both these moves, but it very much feels like water under the bridge at this point. Mm-hmm. Like the Gulls players are very clearly just counting down the days until this is over.
Yeah.
And last but not least, we made it, Sarah. We made it. Ontario makes a surprise move here and gets Nate Schnarr from Laval. What can we expect from Nate Schnarr in Ontario?
So Nate Schnarr, he is a 24-year-old center. This is his fourth professional season. This year he's been dealing with injuries. He's been limited to just 27 games with the Rocket this year, 3 goals and 4 assists in that time. So for the Rain, I see this move as one to help fill out their lineup. They've recently had to make a handful of recalls from the ECHL, due to injuries, particularly among their forwards. So adding Schnarr helps fill out forward lines in absence of players like Alex Turcotte, who is, yes, hurt again. Schnarr isn't a replacement for Turcotte in any way, and also Turcotte's not the only one who's hurt, but he's just the most prominent to mention. And as a center, this is where Nate Schnarr is going to come in. He at least is an upgrade over a career ECHL guy in that role. Right now, the Rain are actually playing as we're recording, Schnarr's been slotting into that 3C role, which feels about right for him. He was a pretty solid part of Laval's playoff run last year, a good defensive-minded center who can chip in some offense here and there, which, like I said, 3C, that's exactly what I want to see out of that role. So, fine.
Yeah, good penalty killer, too. I liked him a lot in Laval last year. I thought he was like a sneaky good piece. Like, not someone who shows up on the score sheet every night, but he does a lot of little things well. I think Ontario will definitely benefit from having Nate Schnarr, especially, I mean, if you're playing ECHLers on your third line, yes, very much an upgrade over that. He's not the sexiest AHL player, but he is very much an AHL player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Sarah, quick question here before we move on to our start bench ship. Who would you say is the most improved team over the in the AHL based on the trade deadline? Yeah, I'm going to put you on the spot here. We didn't prep this one at all. So
no,
not just this episode's trades, the whole shebang. Trade deadline, AHL trade deadline. Who do you like?
My gut instinct says to go with Rockford for most improved.
I like what Rockford did.
Rocker Grimaldi alone.
That is a very big one, especially because like Grimaldi is going to be, could theoretically be playing third line on that team. Mm-hmm. Like if you put the Gust, Senni, Arcini, I always say that wrong. I don't know why. I think when I first started, I just assumed it was Senni and it was a long time before I corrected myself. But anyway, but if they keep that Gust, Reichel, Senni line together, he obviously doesn't play there. But like they've been breaking that line up and putting Reichel in charge of the second line. And then if you put Grimaldi on the third, like that's three, just
that's terrifying.
Vicious, especially with that 2-3 that they play. Watching Rocco Grimaldi like reload through the top of the zone and just come crashing down. That sounds beautiful. I do like that answer. I kind of like the thing that keeps me from saying Rockford is like, yes, they got Khudobin, who's at least in theory a better goaltender than how he's performed this year. Like he's not even a 900 goalie, and that's not ideal.
Yeah,
Especially because I feel like Texas has at least played respectable in front of him. Rockford has not had good goaltending at any point this year. Arvid Soderblom, who was a finalist for goalie of the year last year, has just not been stopping pucks the same reason. I don't think that's necessarily all on him, but at the end of the day, like I feel like Rockford needed to go get like Dustin Tokarski or someone who was like, that's like, if Soderblom can't get it done in the playoffs, that's a guy who I absolutely trust. Whereas like, I think Khudobin can be that guy still, maybe. Right. But like, I look at what Hartford did, and Hartford has Louis Domingue, who's a goalie I can believe in. They have a lot of the parts that, because I mean, now that basically the Rangers are, we're going to be pulling people from the stands before we can pull them from Hartford because we have like 80 cents. We have couch cushion money between us and the salary cap. So like they're going to leave Hartford alone, and they got Clan Denning, who's an improvement. Oh my God, there are more pieces I can't think of, but like they've definitely bulked up that team, and they sent back a lot of what they've been taking from them in recent years. Mm-hmm. So I think Hartford, if they actually get into the playoffs, which is not a guarantee at this point. I like what they did a lot. I will say too, they didn't do much at the deadline, but sneaky team, Springfield. Yeah. I think Springfield, you know, getting a lot of guys healthy. The Scott Perunovich Payne tour is going on a second farewell tribute thing, which if you've ever seen AC/DC or Guns N' Roses, you always know the one that farewell tour is never the actual farewell. So, but I think they could be sneaky good too. But that's my pick. I think Rockford's a solid one. I like Hartford just a teeny bit more. But that is kind of where we're headed with Start Bench Ship. We're going to talk about some playoff teams. Sarah, are you ready?
I am ready.
Let's do it. All right. The theme for these, when we usually do three, we're going to do four today, you know, for reasons that will be obvious. We're going to start in the Atlantic Division and talk about three Atlantic playoff teams that are all saddled up right next to each other. Sarah, Start Bench Ship. The Springfield Thunderbirds, the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, or the Bridgeport Sound Tigers?
All right.
Who do you think makes the deepest playoff run? That is the how we're ranking these.
So we're not actually relocating any of them to
ECHL. No, not relocating. Or doing logo. Like, this is which of these playoff teams that are all kind of clustered together, which one do you think makes the deepest run?
For all of the reasons that you just outlined, I'm going with Springfield as my start. They look good. They've kind of overcome some of their earlier bumps. I think they're interesting to watch. We're going to bench the Phantoms and ship the Sound Tigers, because I still, much like you, I don't know how much I believe in them.
I'm going to copy and paste that pretty much verbatim. For the reasons I mentioned before, Springfield looks like they are gearing up for another big run. I'm liking what I'm seeing from Joel Hofer, more or less. He had one shaky start the other night, but for the most part, has been pretty solid down the stretch run. They get Scott Perunovic back, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
They've got a lot healthier, it seems like, in recent weeks. And I feel like they're a team that can surprise teams in the playoffs this year. Lehigh Valley, Troy Grosnick is healthy again now. The Flyers also very clearly not making the playoffs, which helps them. I think they're another team too that can be sneaky good. And straight up, I don't trust Bridgeport. I don't trust Brent Thompson to make good choices. Like, that roster we talked about in the very beginning of the season, they basically are running it back with the same roster they had last year and expecting better results. And I just don't believe that's a thing. Like, should they get in, Corey Schneider absolutely can steal them a playoff round. He did it last year when they got heavily outplayed by a skeleton crew of Providence and still managed to pull out both games because Corey Schneider just said, yeah, that's not, you're not scoring. So like, Bridgeport can goalie a team for sure, but I don't actually believe in them.
Yeah.
All right. North playoff teams. I will kick us off, but we're going to go with Syracuse, Rochester, and Laval for this one. I am very clearly, and I've stated this case previously on the show too, I'm starting Syracuse here. I think this team, of all three of these teams, they're the only one who is a goalie I genuinely believe in. Like, Hugo Almefelt is good. And I thought he was good last year, but he had development to do. And this year he's definitely taken the step forward that I expected to see. And he's ran with it. He's taken that starting job and run with it. And Syracuse is a team that has a lot of talent. They papered down Darren Radish, who, I mean, I could see him sticking with Tampa, but you know, if Tampa gets bounced in the first round by Toronto, a thing that is theoretically possible, just throwing it out there. Then, you know, he clearly goes straight to Syracuse. And he still might, like, I don't know if Tampa necessarily keeps him to be part of their playoff roster. He could, but I think Syracuse is the most talented of these three teams. I'm going to bench Laval here. This is a close one for me. Like, it's razor thin, but I want to believe that there's more to Laval, and I want to believe that playoff atmosphere will push the team further. I don't think either Laval or Rochester are terribly good, to be honest. I think they're a very distant second and third here to Syracuse, but I believe in Laval just a pinch more. I want to believe that there are playoff performances out of Caden Primo and guys like that that can help push this team at least to be threatening in a first round matchup. I don't believe in Rochester. Like, I still think it's funny at the beginning of the season when Seth Appert was quoted as saying, talent won't be a problem for this team this year. And, well, Seth, you said that. And how is it working out for you? Like, they have good players. Don't get me wrong. It's not like it's, you know, a roster full of ECHLers. But, like, I feel like the same problems that plagued them last year on defense and goaltending are still hanging out there. And they don't have, you know, JT Paterka or Jack Quinn to fall back on this year in terms of offensive firepower. So that's how I feel about it. Sarah, what do you think?
We are like batting 1,000 or whatever the saying is. I'm not a baseball person. Starting Syracuse, much like you, they are the only team with a goaltender that I like trust to actually not like blow it. They have always been traditionally good, as long as the Lightning have been good the past couple of years. I am benching Laval. I think the other point for Laval is that very soon the Montreal Canadiens NHL season is going to be over. And any Rocket players who are up there, you know, I haven't checked to see who they moved around, but they will certainly be getting someone back from Montreal, which I think will help them. And yes, Rochester is absolutely a mirage.
All right. Let us head over to the Central Division and talk about Milwaukee, Rockford, and Iowa. Sarah, kick us off. This is a little bit of a trickier one.
Yeah. I'm going to start Rockford for the same reasons I talked about earlier. I liked their improvements at the deadline. I think as long as Arvid Soderblom can like kind of get it together, you know, they have shown they can outscore their problems. And so Rockford, I think, can hang on. Milwaukee, I like Milwaukee a lot, but I've just got to give Rockford the edge here. I do not believe in the Iowa Wild whatsoever. They just had a stretch where they won 1 out of 10 games. Chicago very nearly closed the gap with them. I'm sorry, but the Iowa Wild, I believe in even less than any of these other teams we've talked about.
So I'm in a similar vein here. I am going to start Milwaukee over Rockford for one reason, and that reason is Askarov. Askarov is the goalie on these three teams that I trust the most. Otherwise, like, I take Rockford here. I think Rockford is a deeper forward group, a more interesting and compelling team overall. But Soderblom has not looked as sharp this year, and Hudobin has not been that great, has not been very good for Texas. So I'm going to lead the team who has the best goaltending first, and that's definitely Milwaukee in this case. But I think Rockford still has a chance to make a deep run here. It's just about what they can, if they can get key saves, I think Rockford can go far. But I'm taking Milwaukee over them. I'm benching Rockford. I'm shipping Iowa. Two words, Sammy Walker. He's in Minnesota right now, and he has earned that spot. Don't get me wrong, but without Sammy Walker, Iowa is bad. Like, yeah. Marco Rossi cannot carry that team on his own. And I honestly am not that high on Tim Army, their coach. So let's call Iowa what it is. They are a team that Sammy Walker and Marco Rossi like carry to relevance. Jesper Walstad has definitely started off the season rough, but has started to kind of get his act together a little bit. So I think that helps them. But by and large, this is a team that's been picked clean by Minnesota. And that's what Minnesota's job does. I was making Minnesota Wild. So they've done that in that aspect. But yeah, this, I don't think Iowa's very good. I'm with you there, Sarah. And last but not least, the West Coast, the Pacific Division teams. I didn't pick the bottom of this one because it felt like that was not as compelling. So I went with the middle there, kind of that middle tier of Abbotsford, Colorado, and Ontario. Sarah, I forget, did you start the last one? I think you did.
So I did, but yeah.
I am going to start Abbotsford here. And for one very, very simple reason, I saw who they papered down. Mm-hmm. Pod Colson, Christian Willanen, like those are big, big pieces for them. Because without them, Abbotsford is not very good. They do not have the firepower to keep up in the Pacific. But if you put Podkolzin and Willanen in there, suddenly we have a team. Whereas everything else, I'm not thrilled with. But they also have a coach that probably should be in the NHL as at least an assistant in Jeremy Colton. So that is another kind of feather in their cap. Like, I like Marco Sturm. I'm not as high on Colorado's coach and Greg Cronin, but I think Abbotsford definitely has the coaching advantage there. I am going to bench Ontario because I also saw who Ontario papered down. Hello, yeah. Rasmus Kupari and Quentin Byfield. Come on down. The other thing too, sorry, to make Abbotsford's case, Vancouver is very not making the playoffs. Where LA is and the Abs are. I expect LA does not go as far as Colorado because their goalie is Phoenix Copley and Jonas Korpisalo. Sure. So I imagine we'll probably see, you know, Quinton Byfield. There's a good chance we see Quinton Byfield on the Rain. And Byfield and Kupari on the Rain, and plus maybe some good breaks on them health-wise, definitely elevates them to scary status. Colorado doesn't really get a lot back from the Avalanche, and I expect the Avalanche to go places in the playoffs. So I think Colorado, as assembled, is good, but that lack of, like, oh, they're getting so-and-so back from the Avs. Like, they're not getting Bowen Byram. They're not getting they're getting the team they basically have had most of the season. So I'm unexcited. Sarah, what say you?
Ditto. Same things, same reasoning. Abbotsford, yeah, they're getting their big guns back very soon. Vancouver's not going to need them after very long. Ontario, like, I'd like to make the homer choice and go pick Ontario, but I just don't 100% believe it. You talk about the Kings goaltending. Look, at the Rain's goaltending is also incredibly sketchy. Cal Peterson has not been particularly good. Hoped that he would work out his issues with the Rain, but it's not. We're not seeing much of an improvement necessarily over what we had seen from him with the Kings. Matt Vallalta exists, so I don't entirely trust the Rain. The playoffs is not where you're winning games 6-5. And that is sometimes how they have to win their games. So that gives me pause. And Colorado, same reasons as you. They've already been decimated because of the Avalanche having basically everyone hurt. And now the Avalanche are going to just need bodies for playoffs and Black Aces and everything like that. So don't entirely buy Colorado going very far.
Yeah. What do you think that LA does when it comes to playoffs with their goaltending situation? Do you think that they leave Ontario's goaltending tandem as it is now, or do you think that they pull Cal Peterson back to LA and try and do that?
I think they leave it as it is now. And the primary reason is the Kings and the Rain practice out of the same facility. You know, they don't, there's no need to be like, we got to get Cal Peterson here just in case. They can call him up at a second if they need him. You know, obviously, if he gets hurt or something in the Rain's playoffs, that's got to hope that nothing happens in the NHL. But no, I think they leave the Rain alone. What'll be more interesting will be to see if they actually send people back. Last season, whenever the Kings got bounced from the playoffs, they had papered down a couple, I think Byfield and maybe Turcotte, like they papered down some guys, but then they never actually got to play. They never actually reassigned them. I know there were travel issues, whatever, but do Quentin Byfield and Rasmus Kupari actually end up playing for the Rain, or do they get stuck in like a limbo if the Kings do get eliminated early? But no, I think they leave Cal Peterson where he is. Everything that I have heard has not been looking good for him. So I don't think they are in any hurry to pull him up.
Yeah, I'm looking now. There is no goaltender that they papered down. So yeah, they're going to ride Cal Peterson and Matt Vallalta in the playoffs because Phoenix Copley ain't coming back.
No.
That's a, is he still on that, like, no, he can't be on emergency.
No, they called him up just as a regular call up.
Yeah.
Like
he's a regular.
Ago.
Yeah. So Phoenix Copley is in LA the rest of the season. Good for him.
Yeah.
And they signed him to an extension for a year. Mm-hmm. And that is, wow. He makes that's a, both of those are one way deals too. Jeez. Good for him. Yeah, looking back at Phoenix Copley's contract history.
He, you know, there will be a fun tale to tell someday about the guy who basically stole Jonathan Quick's job and turned him into a Vegas Golden Knight, which makes me physically ill.
Everyone's like, man, I can't believe he's not happy going to Columbus. I'm like, he left L.A. to live in Ohio. People are mad. All right, Sarah. any closing thoughts before we head out here?
I am glad we have a whole year until the trade deadline again.
Yeah, I hopefully, I mean, I know it's obviously always going to be two separate weeks, but like there was a fair amount of moves.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, most of them weren't super significant, but some of them were. It's, yeah. We kind of had to balance, you know, okay, that guy's an ECHLer next to,
right.
No, this is an impact player. So I,
yeah.
All right. We are going to make it the full hour. We are going to make it a full hour here. So I feel like we did the rapid fire for a good reason, or we'd still be like talking about what Chicago did right now if we did like our full usual deep dive.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Sarah, start us out.
All right. That is it for the show today. Thank you so much for watching and or listening. The Calder Farmstead is part of the Full Press Radio Network. You can listen to this and several other great hockey, sports, and sports entertainment programs all at www.fullpresscoverage.com. Just click the podcast drop-down menu in the top right portion of the website and enjoy.
And if you guys are enjoying the Calder Farmstead, please, please, please make sure you subscribe so you get episodes in a timely fashion. Trade deadline recaps in April and May, not going to be as exciting or informative. Also, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon, please rate and review the podcast. That's super helpful. Or if you're watching on YouTube, like the video, comment what you thought of the episode. Doing these things help other people find the show, as the results for searching for AHL podcast are organized by, you know, number of reviews, number of comments, how many people like the channel, the number of subscribers, that kind of thing. And your reviews, we do read them, help us improve the show. So if you have some constructive criticism, we're happy to hear it. You can also follow us on social media at Calder Farmstead on Twitter, at The Calder Farmstead on Instagram and Facebook. Links to all of that and more can be found on our Linktree page, which is scrolling down below, but for those on podcast, is linktr.ee/The Calder Farmstead. Big thanks to Adrian Drake, who made our theme music. You can find him on social media at AD_dysfunction. That's AD_DYSFUNCTION, so we can make music for you too. Sarah, where can the people find you?
So my name is Sarah Avampado. You can find me representing Full Press Hockey on Twitter at Right Said Sarah. It's WRITE Said Sarah with an H. You can check out my writing at Full Press Hockey, where I talk about the Ontario Reign, or over at Kane's Country, where I talk about the Chicago Wolves. Sean, where can people find you?
I'm Sean O'Brien. You can find me on Twitter at SeanO'Brien81. That's SeanOBRIEN81. I'm also on Instagram at SeanO'Brien_81. My Twitter is probably the more interesting follow. It's mostly hockey, but occasionally some random musings about pop culture and things around me. My Instagram is like mostly just pictures of my dog, who is adorable, but she knows it. You can find my stats work. So the model, the game predictions, the playoff predictions. Hopefully soon, a big money puck-like graph that shows all the team's chances at winning the Calder Cup, if programming it doesn't kill me first. You can find all of that at bit.ly/datadumpandchase, all lowercase, all one word. Thank you for tuning in to the show. For Sarah Avampado, I am Sean O'Brien. Please, dump and chase responsibly.